That matter.
Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and this is the show that's designed to give you an edge, whether you're working for that next promotion or perhaps you're running your own business and you're looking to optimize your organization. Tonight, we have a litany of senior executives that are all going to give you their tips and tricks to getting to the top of either your profession or your business. We have David Donaldson, who's the finance director for Emirates Investment Authority. We also have Dr. Ashraf Gamaldeen, chief executive officer of Hakama. And we also have Vimal Sethi, the managing director of Synchron, one of the fastest growing IT companies out there. And Ismail Mughab, the founder of AuditX, a gentleman who has almost 40 years of audit experience across the African and Middle East region. I'll be giving you their tips, but let's get started. Our first guest is actually David Donaldson. He's a finance director for Emirates Investment Authority. He's a graduate of Oxford. He's a master's in jurisprudence from there, and he's a prior to joining the EIA or Emirates Investment Authority, he was the chief financial officer at Abraaj, which is one of the region's top private equity firms, and one of the epic success stories, Arif Naqvi, which most of us would be familiar with. He also started his career at Arthur Andersen, where he qualified as an ICAEW chartered accountant. And after qualifying, he went on to work at the infamous investment bank Solomon Brothers. So we got a good mix of investment banking and private equity here, a gentleman who has really been in the hot seat and seen his fair share of bulls and bears. David, welcome to Eye on Career.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And then our next guest is Dr. Ashraf Gamaldeen, the chief executive officer of Hakama. And prior to joining Hakama, he was the chairman of Egypt Post, and before that, the deputy executive director of the Egyptian Banking Institute. And across his career, he has held a litany of senior executive positions. He currently holds a PhD from Manchester University and a master's degree in public administration from Carleton University, Canada, which is in the town of Ottawa. It's also my hometown. So it's a fantastic degree, in fact. Dr. Ashraf, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hi, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you in such a small world and such a global world now, where you have your degrees from two different countries, you're working in the Middle East. It's a global environment we're in now.
Yeah, true.
But you have a real affinity for corporate governance, and that tends to be a hot topic these days as the Middle East lurches forward into the 21st century. Do you feel that corporate governance is actually a vehicle that helps optimize a business, that it's actually a lever that's driving peak performance in organizations?
Well, in the last 10, 15 years, when we look at all the major problems and collapses that happen in the world of business and banking, they are all back to corporate governance and failures from the board of directors and internal controls. And it is clearly that it is really something which is too risky to ignore corporate governance. But also what we have seen is simply that there is a very close relationship between better corporate governance and better performance for companies and banks. So the more corporate governance you have, the better performance you'll have, and your shares will be performing much better in the capital market.
Is this only for capital market companies, though? Because I think when you look at it, it's, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you have a huge, you know, you're the visionary, you're creating that value. You know, you don't actually want to give up that power. And the other argument is, doesn't giving up some of that power dilute the strength of the vision of the visionary? You know, you're creating these committees and structures, and now you're limiting their ability to take direction, to make decisions. Does it somewhat limit agility?
Well, you are right, in one way, but we have seen that all the companies which start small, in order for these companies to grow and to continue. The only way to do that is through proper corporate governance. When you are an entrepreneur, you start your business, it's small. If you are successful, you start to get on more partners, you start to get more employees, you start to think big. Once you do that, you would have to have the right mechanism that will help your partners to have the rights and your investors who are willing to invest in the company to make sure that their money is in safe places. If you are going to go for loans from the bank will never give you money unless if they know that you have better corporate governance, because that's the only guarantee for their money. So yes, you're right. The entrepreneur or the owner will give up some of his powers, but that's the only way in order for you to grow. And if actually the family's money is there as well, we always tell families that if you don't really have corporate governance, what you end up losing is the company and the family, because all the family issues will be reflected on the company performance, all the company problems will go to the family, you have all these problems. So we always say if you have better corporate governance, you do have Chinese walls between the family and the company, so you have a very good relationship, it's well organized, documented, and then everything will be fine. If you ignore that, you face problems. And that's why research says that 70% of the family businesses die after the third generation. They just disappear because they cannot continue after this.
Yes, but come on. I mean, even if you look at the private sector, how many companies last, three generations, third generations, we're talking 70 years plus, right? So you could say the same thing about the private sector, is that, after 70 years, 90% of private sector companies also fail. I mean, aren't they manipulating the statistic a little bit there when they take a dig? I mean, if there's any entrepreneur out there, if you say your company is going to last 70 years, I think that would be a huge success.
I would think of that person is really entrepreneur, he wouldn't think of 7 years. He would think of the company to last for long.
Longer than 70 years?
Yes.
That's 7 decades. No,
definitely, yes.
How?
You don't
wow.
build the company so that the company will collapse after some time. You say, well, I'm actually building an empire. Now, some people would like to think small and stay small, which is okay. So you can decide to have a company, which is a small company, just for you and your son and your grandson, but that's it. End of the story. Well, that's then your sort of scope of success. But if your dream is for your name and the company to stay forever, now, most of the big companies that we hear about right now started as family business, and they carry the names of people actually in these companies. You have Rolls-Royce, you have, Mercedes-Benz, you have lots of companies. These are names of people who created these companies, but the names are still there and actually it's growing stronger every day.
So, what you're saying is that 7 years is not enough, 100 years is not enough. You should build your company to last eternity.
Exactly.
That's a high bar that you
no
bring
but
into
I'll
the
tell
table.
You something. Even if you don't want to own the company forever, what happens is if you have a strong company, if you have good corporate governance, you can even exit at any point of time. So the company is strong enough, you can sell it to somebody else who will then continue the journey.
Mm.
But you are building something strong, you sell it, and you spend your life in the Caribbean enjoying yourself and so on. So you can do that as well. But again, you have to have a strong thing to sell. This is the key thing.
Right, but as some of the companies, they have problems. What have you seen, or what's some of the worst examples you've seen of individuals not really adjusting well to listing and the requirements of a publicly listed corporate governance structure?
Yeah, I mean, we have seen many examples. Maybe the latest example that came out from Dubai itself, from the IFC, where actually Hawqama is located, is the famous case of Damas company, which is a company that was owned by, some brothers. And they got listed and they forgot that the company was listed. Actually, it's a public company. So they still dealt with the company as it's their own, sort of money. So they take gold from the company, they buy land and sell it to the company without really going through the board of directors and everything else. And then once the regulator found out about that, actually they got involved and they disbanded the entire board and they put some penalty on the company itself. Eventually, the company was sold to somebody else. But I mean, the key thing is that was a classical case of not realizing that the company is an entity. It's a legal entity. You cannot deal with it as it's actually, that's my money and that's my family, and so it's okay. So that was a big example that came out from the DIFC. Actually.
And the company, then what happened? It was delisted, I believe.
Well, it was actually penalized and then it was sold to a foreign country, a company in Qatar. So it was then okay after that. But I mean, somebody had to take over to rescue the company and to put it on the right track again.
So almost listing a company can be value destroying if it's not managed effectively.
This is the key thing, exactly. But what we worry about is once the company is listed, it becomes a public concern. It's not like something private anymore. People start to buy shares in this company. They sell shares. Loans are given to the company. So if it's not done right, then you are risking money of different parties there. And that's where corporate governance really is enforced by the regulator and the company itself. It's not left like that. And all these things and more, actually, we are going to discuss. We know we have our annual conference on Tuesday where we cover all things like this. And we have companies talking about the journeys. Some of them are successful. Some of them are not so successful. But again, to give the lessons to people so that they understand the difference between a good company and a bad company from the governance perspective.
So, and you've created an index, I understand, to help differentiate this. What's the findings and what percentage difference does, you know, your index versus the regular market?
Yes, that index actually, it ranks the companies of the region, the bigger companies of the region, based on their corporate governance practices. And what we found out is companies which have better corporate governance systems, their shares perform 10 to 20% better than companies which are not doing that good in corporate governance. I'm talking about share prices in the stock exchange. So in general, when the market is going up, these companies, the shares of these companies are actually going higher. When the company is when the market is going down, shares of these companies are holding stronger than the rest of the market.
Holding the line. What are some of the companies that are in the index?
All the big companies of the region. So all the big companies in the region, we talk about 150.
Was Arabtech on the list?
Did
you have that in your index?
No.
You didn't have them
not,
in your
no.
index. Huh? That would have been...
Because actually,
dodge
what we
the
do,
bullet.
Yeah, what we do in that index is we analyze all the details about the company itself and its board of directors, its committees, its internal audit systems, disclosure policies, websites, and all that stuff. So you could see that some companies are not really strong enough to be on that index.
So you're saying that Arabtech didn't meet the criteria? Or you don't want to make
no
a definitive
comment.
Statement at this
No comment on this one.
So who's at the top of the list?
We are still calculating the index for this year, but the good thing is actually you could see trends of countries. So you could see countries which, for example, when Egypt was a stable country, you could see the companies in Egypt stock exchange are doing well. Now, Jordan had some problems, then so Jordanian companies are doing bad in the index. So what I'm trying to say, obviously, there is this relationship between the politics and business practices. When the country is stable, you see companies are doing really very good because they care about all these things. When companies are in trouble, you know, companies are worried about their own sort of survival in the market.
Of course. So who do you think has the best corporate governance in your or your strategically non-answer?
No, I would say banks in general actually outperform other companies because, you know, banks are regulated internally and internationally as well. So all these banks are really not just regulated by our own regulators, but also there are eyes from the different countries on them.
They're analysts everywhere.
So banks of the region are really doing fine as compared to the rest of the country. However, we have to say that in the region still we are lagging behind. I mean, yes, we are doing, you know, better, but we are lagging behind. We still have to do lots of work.
And you're having an event coming up, I think? Or
yes, we are having on Tuesday our 8th annual conference for corporate governance in the MENA region. And in that we cover the state-owned enterprises, the family businesses, financial institutions, rules of the board of directors, risk issues, and things like this. Okay. So it's going to be at the DIFC itself. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I understand you're also working in collaboration with the GCC Business Council, who is a professional networking group, and they're also having an event on Thursday, November 20th at the H Hotel at 8 p.m. for anyone who wants to expand their network. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much, Dr. Ashraf, for coming on. Hopefully we can have you on again soon, and we'll be keeping our eyes on your index as we move forward.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a nice weekend, everyone.
Thank you. And so that was Dr. Ashraf, who is the CEO of Hakama. And we will continue on with David Donaldson, the finance director of Emirates Investment Authority, a gentleman who's worked in some of the top private equity investment banking organizations in the world in just a minute.
This is...